Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Charlotte Tuggle. This week, West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis is our guest here in the studio. Mayor Dennis, thanks for being with us.
Well, hi, Charlotte. You're new.
I am. I am taking over this month.
Did Stan train you well?
Yes, I am very prepared right now. Not nervous at all. This is going to be great.
Well, the good thing is that I know you're going to be much more polite and you're going to ask very appropriate questions with solid follow-up, and it's going to be an amazing half hour, right?
Now, don't think just because Stan's not here that this is going to be a cakewalk
for you.
We've got a lot to get to.
I feel his aura in the room, though.
All right. So if you have a question for Mayor John Dennis, you can call it in by dialing 765-496-1999. You can also shoot us an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. So first, most important story of the week. I heard you went golfing earlier. How did that go?
I'm not a golfer. You know, it's really kind of a drag. Everybody that it seems that is involved in anything in this community is a golfer. And the Chamber had their annual golf outing, and we always participate. And honestly, until I got this gig, I had never even picked up a golf club. So I've been trying to learn as I do, and we go out on the golf course and we get in these foursomes where, you know, everybody but me knows what the difference between a putter and a wood and a thing iron is and all that. So as an ex-baseball player, though, I've got this amazing eye on the ball skill set. So one thing I know I'm good at is that I can drive. I can hit the ball a mile. Now, which direction it's going to go in, a little bit unpredictable, but it's embarrassing. So usually when people go out, we usually have a lot of fun, and they usually let me do things like hand them clubs, drive the carts. You know, if they have to go to the bathroom, I get to take them to the bathroom. So, yeah, I'm kind of like a golf supporter as opposed to a golf player.
Well, you may not win any awards for your golf playing, but the city certainly just won an award for the
nice
River
segue.
Roundabout Project. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. The city of West Lafayette was recently awarded the American Public Works Association's Public Works Project of the Year Award for the River Road Roundabout Project. Mm-hmm. Now, that is part of a CSO initiative. So for people who don't know, what's a CSO? Why is it important?
A combined sewer overflow. That's when you get the good stuff, like the clear water and the bad stuff, the stuff that's not clear water. It comes together, it goes to the treatment plant and gets treated. But it's part of a bigger program where you actually have, let's just call it the city plumbing. You get the plumbing organized and you get it separated to where you're not going to have any potential contaminants of what's going on with your utility. And that was kind of the cool thing about this project. For those that have been around for a while, you remember that was just, you know, a perpendicular intersection with William Street coming down, and there was this really harsh kind of landing when you came to the bottom of the hill. And the intersection itself, because of the amount of traffic that was going to and from there, was somewhat dangerous during our rush hours. And in West Lafayette, we have about five of them because of the university. So we sat down with the design team, and we looked at a creative way to do several things. We knew that the State Street project would soon be coming online. We knew that the volume of traffic, based upon the growth of our student population at Purdue, based upon the growth of our city population, and based on stronger interest in the city of West Lafayette from a commercial perspective, we knew that the population was going to grow and that the traffic was obviously going to get much higher. So we thought that it was incumbent upon us to apply some contemporary designs to help sort of soften the traffic flow. And by that I mean, instead of having the harsh intersections with the grit, you know, with lights with the red, green, yellow sequence, we wanted to continue the flow of traffic, but we wanted to have what they call a natural traffic calming device to keep it moving slowly and to keep it moving safely. So hence the concept of the roundabouts. And again, not our concept necessarily, but what's been done actually around the world. The biggest engineering challenge, though, was trying to take that snap out of that hill and then make sure when you're putting a roundabout that has that large of a geographic footprint, to make sure that it doesn't encroach upon other properties to the point where it's going to be cost prohibitive and or involve some sort of underground issue insofar as drainage and plumbing goes. So our city engineer at the time, Dave Buck, our assistant city engineer, Ed Garrison, who is now our city engineer, and our design team worked really hard on trying to make that thing work the way it's working. we realized early on that there were some issues with soil compaction, and this is all engineering geeky kind of stuff, but soil compaction, we realized that because of the line of sight issue, when you're looking at two different levels, that was kind of a challenge, and that was all designed into the eventual final product, and we are really proud of that. The concept of roundabouts is relatively new for the city of West Lafayette. We've put in about 4 or 5 of them since I've been mayor. And I believe in them. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that don't like them because they don't understand that lane switching while moving dynamic. But we did a lot of research before we did that. And at some of our intersection where we had a high traffic volume, we were realizing we were having much more serious accidents. And in a roundabout, usually what happens is if there is some sort of negative contact between two vehicles, it's a brush, it's a side-to-side, or it's sort of a scrape. So we employed the roundabout technique there, and it really did, you know, support the look and the feel of what eventually turned into the State Street project, and we're really proud of that.
Is there anything that sets that particular roundabout apart from other projects that you've done in the city and then other CSO projects that are happening around the state?
Yeah, well, the roundabout specifically, because the traffic volume comes from, we get some large truck traffic that comes from 231 that come down North River Road. And they encounter the roundabout. Because of the volume of traffic that comes when you're dealing with the Purdue traffic, when you talk about home Purdue football games, home basketball games, and then the general rush hours that occur, that becomes a challenge. And then the other thing is that there are a lot of folks that are unaware of how to basically navigate a roundabout. And we have tutorial sessions on our website. We've gone to a lot of public meetings to try and provide some guidance and education. But we'll always have that sort of anomaly when folks don't recognize and realize how to sort of utilize those things. So we think that conceptually it's a great way to get traffic, to continue the flow of traffic. It works better than the signalized perpendicular intersections. They're safer. But still, there is a learning curve, and depending on how familiar you are with roundabouts, whether it be from the courtesy side or whether it be from actually just in the navigation side, sometimes they can create challenges.
I'm glad you brought up the informational sessions and everything. We actually got a question from two listeners. Christy and Brent want to know if there needs to be additional signage informing people to yield to cars in both lanes of the roundabout. They say they've had many near misses while exiting. They also want to know if there will be a greater police presence during the morning and afternoon rush hours. Mm-hmm. So what's your thought on safety precautions that are actually there physically at the roundabout? Have you given any thought to that?
Yeah, you know, we do. And there's two things that happen. And this is kind of one of those things you don't think about until somebody makes you aware of it. When you do a lot of signage at an intersection, or you have a lot of signage on a very small stretch of roadway, the natural instinct on the part of the driver is to, what do you think?
Go.
What do you think, Charlotte? To read the signs, right?
Yeah,
they start reading the signs, and so the traffic wisdom then sort of went from having the signage, you know, adjacent to the road, to having the signage on the road. Okay, once again, slightly distracting, but sort of at least it's a more focused frame of reference for that. The signage on the roundabouts are difficult to do because how do you, for instance, when you're driving on the interstate and you want to switch lanes or you need to get on an exit ramp somehow, there are arrows and there's sort of guidance that allows for you to do that. And it's done over a very long stretch of traffic or a roadway. With a roundabout, it's a little bit more challenging because it's a very compressed area and you got to do some movements pretty quickly. I've had folks that have told me that they've done multiple laps on a roundabout because they can't get off at what their turn is. And these are folks that are very courteous, that they drive very efficiently, and that they are waiting for somebody to politely let them in. And again, that could happen on any stretch of the roadway where somebody's just being rude and you don't get that opening to get your car in there. But what we did realize is we created some signage, and we used the standardized visual product on the roundabout to make people aware of how they need to navigate the roundabout. For instance, if you want to get off at a particular road you'll see some labeling on the road that says you need to get into this lane to be able to make this right turn. And again, it's a learning curve. What the big challenge is that the general speed for a roundabout is less than 20 miles an hour. That is the general prescribed speed. So when you do have any negative contact between vehicles, again, it's sort of a brush. It's not a contact that's going to create injury. When you have large vehicles that come into the roundabout, such as articulated trucks, that creates a challenge because obviously when they're making the turns, their trucks take up both lanes. And that just requires, it's no different than what happens on straight roads and perpendicularized intersection, but it's just a matter of being courteous and being aware. We have tutorials on the website. The police presence, we generally do patrol our roundabouts. And again, the only thing that we can do is set a car up. And if you drive down, I believe we have one set up today. At the roundabout by our wastewater right there at Williams and by our wastewater treatment plant. And we police it the best we can, but, you know, it's a matter of familiarity, it's a matter of courtesy, and it's a matter of slowing down and being aware of your environment while you're driving.
We've got about 15 minutes left with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. If you have a question, you can call it in at 765-496-1999. You can send it in an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. So we reported a couple of weeks ago that SNAP benefits, food stamps, aren't accepted at any Greater Lafayette farmers market, despite the fact that Greater Lafayette Commerce received approval 2 years ago to accept those benefits at the Lafayette and Purdue farmers markets. You're in kind of a different situation.
Yeah,
the city
we
has
do our
its
own, gig.
Own
yeah.
farmers market. Mm-hmm. So are you looking at integrating that program into
Yes.
Work?
Yes, we have had it in the past. We have used SNAP and food stamps in the past. And I approached our market master earlier this year about that, just generally just kind of curious about how we roll with that. And they're going to be doing it this year. I've been assured that they're going to be doing it this year. The issue that we had is that everybody that works at the market is a volunteer, and volunteers are like the sea. The tide ebbs and flows. At the beginning of the market this year, we didn't have very many volunteers because people were still busy with school and work on those sort of things. So as we get better staffing, we'll go ahead and we'll get the machine online again, and we should be in a position sometime later this year to be able to do that. You know, we absolutely are aware of how critically important it is that we make good food available to those that might be underserved. And you don't get much better food than you get at a farmer's market, except for maybe at Fresh Time, but that's something we can talk about later. So with the products that are brought there, they're fresh. We obviously have standards about the conditioning of the food that when it's brought into the market for sale. And with the popularity of our market, and I can't speak to Lafayette or to what happens at Purdue, but with the popularity of our market, they usually do pretty good business. So we encourage folks to come to our market. We encourage folks just to hang in with us for a little while until we get our technology up to speed and we get the machines staffed, and then things should be rolling pretty smoothly.
So you're already pretty far in the process.
Oh, yeah.
Seems
yeah. Well,
like.
We've done, like I said, we've done it before.
And why the gap then? Why
staffing?
Have it in the staffing?
Yeah.
So how do you go about staffing something like that? How do you get volunteers?
Well, usually it's just the same way that we do anything when it comes to volunteers. There are folks that are interested in making sure that the market runs smoothly. And it's not just, you know, dealing with the exchange of money or the exchange of food stamps or SNAP program documents. It's also making sure that the traffic flow is smooth. It also makes sure that the vendors that come there are following with the food processing standards. It's also making sure that in the event of inclement weather, we've got enough staff to get people in and out real quickly. And then we also, not only do we have food there, we also have stuff that is sold, and we have to make sure that the stuff isn't going to get anybody hurt. And then we have an entertainment component as well. So there's a lot of kind of things moving around at the same time. And with the food stamp program, you need to make sure that there is somebody at a particular area so that people know where to go, how to get their chits, and how to get things moving on down the road. And then also to make sure that the vendors understand how to coordinate that with the products that they're selling.
I'm glad you brought up Fresh Time because we have just learned that that is moving into what used to be a Marsh supermarket on the north side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what that means for food availability on that side? Was there a need for more fresh food, a specialty food there?
Yeah, well, what happened was is that Marsh, because of some issues at the executive level or at the corporate level, moved out. And that location had been sort of a, you know, when you look at early West Lafayette, that particular location was where everybody went and did their business. There was a Marsh there. There was a Hooks there. I know when I was a little kid, if I was a good guy, my dad would give me 15 cents and I could ride my bike across the bypass and get some gum at Hooks right next to the Marsh store. So it was sort of, at least in the north part of the city, it was kind of an iconic area. And so when it went flat, it really left folks, you know, with the challenge as to where to go and to get the products that they were familiar getting within Marsh. And we're kind of like that. I mean, we get real comfortable doing things in one way, and then when it changes, it gets a little awkward. The biggest thing, though, is that they left the building. They basically moved everything out, and they left the building. The location is just dynamite. It's right in the middle of a very densely populated residential area. And it was very popular as a Marsh store. So we felt that it was incumbent upon us to go ahead and do whatever we could to try and put something back in there. We didn't want to have a fireworks store. We didn't want to have a mattress store. We didn't want to have some of this other stuff that sort of gravitates toward low rent available space. We wanted to have something that would represent West Lafayette and represent it well. Well, I always get hit up on a Fresh Market or a Trader Joe's. Because everybody assumes that if you call a trader, you know, that Joe will answer the phone and he'll say, sure, we'll be right over. Obviously, it doesn't work that way. And I think that, you know, I've had conversations to this effect on the show before. Developers pick you. You know, you can encourage development. You can seek specific developers. But it has to meet their business plan and it has to meet their business model before they come to your community. And Fresh Time was no different. We have a developer that has owned that owns the building. He encouraged contact with Fresh Time. Eric Carlson, our director of development, got involved in the conversation. And we made him feel comfortable in moving to our community. And when you look at the makeup of what goes on around here, case in point, we've done, you know, with State Street and all the roads we've done, we've probably over the past 5 or 6 years done about $1 billion worth of improvement and development with the State Street project. I have had more positive feedback with Fresh Time than I have with anything we've done with State Street. So it was a good choice. We're delighted to have them come to the community. We know that they're going to be very popular with our citizens, and it's just kind of a neat thing to have within the city limits of West Lafayette.
We've got about 10 minutes left on the program with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can call in your questions to 765-496-1999 or send an email to ask@wbaa.org. We have had someone call in. They have said there was a vendor selling puppies at the farmer's market yesterday. She wants to know if there's a rule about that, and if not, should there be?
Yeah, that's a bit of, that's a new one on me. I wasn't there. I didn't get a chance to see it. And this is the first I've heard about it. But generally speaking, the farmer's market, when they're selling things, usually I wouldn't be too pleased to see animals being sold. I'll have to look into that because, again, there's a lot of issues involved with, you know, marketing animals. And from my perspective as a dog lover, you know, you want to make sure that wherever they come from, they're being well looked after and things like that. So I'm not sure that our market master was aware of that. We'll go ahead and kind of look into it and see what's going on there.
So we've got a Fresh Time coming to the north side. We've got a mini Target coming to State Street. We've talked about that before. And then right across from there is what's now Chauncey Hill Mall. Mm-hmm. And there are plans to put something else there. How are those talks going right now?
Really well. The developer is, you know, we have learned our lesson over the past decade or so since we've been here. And we have learned that for a product to be successful, the first step needs to be involving your community and what that eventual product's going to be. And the developing company for that area has done just that. Trinitas is a group that does developments all over the country specific to college communities. And what we've asked that they have what we call sensing sessions with our population. You know, there are certain things that will be there. We know that there's going to be a commercial component, but what that commercial component is going to be, we'll see. It, again, based upon what the needs are. We know that there's going to be a residential component. We also know that there's going to be some sort of overnight hotel type component there as well. But again, that's just sort of boilerplating. And we're not really sure as to specifically what's going to go there. But as we did with Target, we want to make sure that the developer is aware of what our needs are. And they've been very welcome to that concept. They are actually hosting the sensing sessions. This, you know, the city has the power of suggestion to make them done, but the actual host is the developer. The really neat thing about it is that the businesses that are currently there at Chauncey Hill Mall will have the opportunity, you know, they'll basically get first choice on space in the new facility. And it'll be two things. First off, space available, and then if, you know, whatever the rent agreement will be, they'll have to work out with the developer. The second thing is that it's going to continue with the look that we have going up and down State Street, up and down our new downtown area. The intent is to make sure that the structures are close to the street, and then the parking will be in the rear. And with having a hotel product there, if things work out, and then a residential product there, then they're going to need to make sure that they got the available space. And the presumption is that they're going to go underground with some of that as well. So, I mean, it really is exciting because if you're from here and if you've lived here for a long time, that particular vision when you're coming up the hill with the Chauncey Hill Mall really did look a little dated. You know, it had the old dark shingles. It kind of had that overlapped roof look. The businesses were very popular. The student population really loved the businesses there. But when you talk about a growing community, when you talk about the hometown of one of the, you know, best universities in the world, you want to make sure that your gateway has that sort of feel as well.
So when people think of State Street, what do you want that impression to be like?
Well, we believe it or not, that's one of those discussions that we have about every week. You know, what is State Street? What are we trying to represent? And I think first and foremost, people need to know they're in West Lafayette. You know, when you are a subdirective of another community, people just presume you're a suburb of that community. There's a lot of people that aren't familiar with this community that assume West Lafayette is just the west side of Lafayette. So we want to make sure that people know they're in a completely different city that has a completely different look, taste, and feel than the other side of the river. Second off, we want to celebrate our university. You know, the city of West Lafayette is the proud home of Purdue University. So we want to make sure that people know that there is a seamless relationship between the city and the university, and we've worked very hard over the past decade to make sure that's true too. But most importantly, we want to stick with the same guidelines that we've always stuck with. We want to be warm. We want to be welcoming. We want people to have opportunities for retail. We want to make sure that people have living accommodations. And above all, we want to make sure that people are safe. With the State Street project itself, we want to make sure that the traffic flow is intuitive and smooth. And that's been our goal since we got here 11 years ago. So we are excited about it. You know, the developers really have been enthusiastic about this potential opportunity for them. And like I was saying earlier, we are telling people no. Much more often than we're telling people yes. And the good thing about that is being in that unusual sort of unique position as a community to be able to sort of cherry pick what you want, it really does allow for us to create a vision that is going to be around for a long, long time.
So for the Chauncey Hill Mall replacement project, who gets to decide what that replacement is and what it looks like? Who are the stakeholders here who are
The developer is Turnitas. They basically have a product, and they deal with student housing, and they also deal with retail development. So you know that conceptually that's what we're looking at here. But what it's going to be is going to be determined by the marketplace. You know, again, it would be just awesome to get an Apple store there. It would be just awesome to get a Trader Joe's there. They're looking at the residential component. They're actually looking at targeting young professionals, not necessarily student. So it would be nice to have some types of commercial opportunities that would be satisfactory there. But for us, remember, this is the gateway to our community. And because it sits on top of a hill, it can be seen from miles away. So we want to make sure that the look is going to be complementary to everything else that we have going on. With a lot of the apartment buildings that are being built right now, some of the high rises that are being built, we've been very strongly suggesting that they in some way celebrate Purdue University. whether it be with bricks, whether it be with some type of design that celebrates what's going on at Purdue with all the construction going on at Purdue. But most importantly, it has to be something that's going to be well received by our student residents. And, you know, there seems to be, I've often heard a lot of criticism about West Lafayette, about there not being retail opportunities for folks that spend most of their time walking from point A to point B. With the Chauncey Hill Mall, with the products that are going to be going in there, we feel pretty positive and optimistic about the fact that that's going to be changed.
So you brought up the apartments. There are, you know, thousands of units that are about to be in that area. We should mention that the city recently proposed an ordinance that would call for changes to the rental unit inspection rules. But the person who directs these inspections says one of the cited reasons for that ordinance over occupancy is quite rare. So where did that really come into the discussion about looking at these?
Well, really, in all honesty, you know, over occupancy is usually a self-reporting issue. So it's true. We don't proactively find out about that. Usually we get a self-report on that. And over the years, that has truly trended down. But what we're looking more at now is there are certain issues that are contained within a structure, whether it be a multi-unit complex or a residence that's been transferred into a rental property. And a lot of it has to do with safety issues insofar as fire issues go, insofar as plumbing, sanitary issues, insofar as structural issues, things of that nature. And then the exterior. We want to make sure, because a lot of our rental properties are in one of our most cherished neighborhoods in the New Chauncey neighborhood, we want to make sure that the landlords are responsible in making sure that they take care of these products. Because it gets down to the basics. It gets down to the safety of the renters, and it also gets down to the standards of the facility, and that burden falls on the landlord. For us to be aware of that, we have to be physically out there doing inspections. Right now, we have two people who are doing that, and we've got, I think there's the number is 22,000 beds that need, in some way, shape, or form, to have somebody look at them. So the money that we're going to generate from this increase goes right back into the program, the rental inspection program, to staff it and to continue doing the best that we can to ensure the safety of our rental population.
And another area where we'll probably see more housing is the area around the Purdue University Airport. There's a plan for a decades-long billion-dollar makeover for the so-called Discovery Park District. Mm-hmm. So in comparison with the State Street project, mm-hmm. is it easier for you to kind of build an identity mm-hmm. or a reputation when there's, you know, not a whole lot to work with out there?
Yeah, it really is, because we were focused on the West End of the city as well. And we knew that is where, you know, on the East End, we knew we had the opportunity to create a better gateway. On the West End, we have the opportunity to create a brand new gateway. And when we talk about $1 billion worth of development, it is going to have everything there that we have now in the Western End. It's going to have residential. It might have single family residential there. It's going to have a lot of research facilities there. We are getting phone calls daily from research interests that are wanting to come out that way. And it's going to have that. When you come to West Lafayette, you're going to know that you're there. So we're quite pleased.
That's our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks for being with us.
You can find this program
at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet them to WBAA News. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.